A new word for search.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. So far, Google has taken on all comers and trounced them. It has more than 60% of the search engine market. The word Google is in the dictionary. But some former Googlers are going to try to compete with their old company. This morning, they launched a new search engine called Cool. It's spelled C-U-I-L. It comes from an old Irish word meaning knowledge. We asked our innovations reporter, Janet Babin, to check it out. She reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
Cool says its search index spans 120 billion web pages. That would make it three times larger than search leader Google. The broader the index, the larger the potential results. Carl Howe is with technology research company Yankee Group. He says a broader search index won't be enough to push Cool ahead of the pack.
More results are not necessarily better. What I want is better results. And that's really the place where I think they're going to have to shine.
I used Google to find Cool's webpage. Then I searched for Marketplace. The show came up first on both pages. Cool's results look different, displayed in magazine blurbs with more photos. Maybe the biggest difference between the two sites isn't the results, but the search record. Cool has promised not to store user search histories or web surfing patterns like Google does. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Wall Street has some things to chew on this morning. The private equity firm Kohlberg Kravis Roberts says it's going public, and Kraft and Verizon had decent profit reports. But so far, the Dow is down 39 points to 11,331. The NASDAQ is down a couple. The S&P 500 is flat so far. European shares are mostly lower, and there were mixed results in Asia today. The price of oil is $125 a barrel. It's dropped $20 in the past 2 weeks. The main reason? People are driving less. In fact, the Transportation Department has a report out today that says Americans have reduced their driving by 40 billion miles this year. But that's not going to show up in the profit reports of the big oil companies. Amy Scott has more.
Analysts say most of the big oil companies will turn in record profits this week. No surprise there. The price of oil averaged more than $120 a barrel between April and June. That's almost double prices the year before. Analyst Phil Weiss follows the business for Argus Research. He says he's hoping to learn a bit more this week about how the oil companies plan to use that money. They've come under fire for spending more buying stock back from investors than finding new oil.
From a long-term perspective, I'd rather see them put it into projects than put it into stock buybacks, because if they buy back stock, they're not really growing the company.
And they're not helping relieve high prices. But buybacks do please shareholders. They boost the value of the stock, and oil shares have fallen recently. Analysts say that's because oil company stocks track oil prices, which have come down from their summer highs. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Just when you think you've heard every advertising pitch, Dr. Pepper launches a new campaign today. It's based on research that people who drink Dr. Pepper slowly enjoy it more than people who drink it at regular speed. I'm not making this up. And that people who drink slowly like to drink Dr. Pepper. I guess they're running out of ideas after 123 years in business. The company has hired two doctors as pitchmen. That would be Dr. J and Dr. Fraser Crane. This is the Morning Report for Monday, July 28th on Marketplace.org. I want to talk a little more about this report from the Transportation Department on driving. It's great for the environment that we're driving less, but it's not so great for our roads and bridges. The less gas we buy, the less we pay in federal fuel taxes. And the government uses that money to fix the roads and bridges. See Statura reports from Minnesota Public Radio.
The American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials reports the states will need at least $140 billion to repair old, crumbling, and narrow bridges. The organization's executive director, John Horsley, says the states don't have that money. Congress might chip in $1 billion, but Horsley says it's not enough.
Looking at the bigger picture, unless Congress generates substantial additional revenues, the Highway Trust Fund will become insolvent, and the Congress will have no choice but to dramatically cut back on investment.
That means no money to rebuild bridges, and forget new technologies like sonar that could identify stresses before bridges break. In Rochester, Minnesota, I'm Cee Stachura for Marketplace.
Fuel prices are also being blamed for big losses at Ryanair in Europe. The low-cost carrier saw earnings fall 85% last quarter. Ryanair got its business model from Southwest, which has still managed to turn a profit. But Ryanair may have taken the low-cost model a little too far. Stephen Beard explains.
Ryanair says it could make an annual loss this year. Like most carriers, it's been hit by the rising price of fuel. But as one of the world's top budget airlines, it's been harder hit than most. Fuel accounts for almost half its operating costs and so has a bigger impact on the bottom line. Ryanair pushed the low-cost concept further than anyone else. But, says David Robertson of the Times of London, it made a fundamental error. One of the many costs it cut was the cost of hedging or insuring against the rising price of fuel.
They've gone into the last few years with no hedging or very minimal 5% of their requirements, which means, of course, that they're nearly entirely exposed to oil prices at $130, $140, $145 a barrel.
Southwest didn't make that mistake. Because of hedging, it's effectively cut the cost of its fuel in half. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Apparently, even an oil man can change his ways. T. Boone Pickens is making headlines with his push for wind power. He's even building a wind farm in his home oil state of Texas. But this transition is easier said than done. David Martin Davies reports from Abilene, Texas.
West Texas rancher Raymond McDaniel has 57 giant wind turbines on his ranch. At peak output, each one grinds out enough electricity to power about 350 homes.
We can ranch right around the turbines. They don't interfere with any of our ranching operations. And the income stream from the turbines has been a blessing.
Around here, oil wells used to be as common as coyotes, but the old rocker pumps are rusting. Giant windmills like McDaniel's now punctuate the wide open plains. But there's a problem. Too few electric transmission lines to connect the wind farms in West Texas to the big cities like Dallas and Houston. Those lines can only carry so much power, and frequently the wind farms are told to power down.
They're running, they're turning, we're making the electricity, we just have no way to get it to the people that need it and want it.
Ned Ross of FPL Energy stands under a giant turbine at Horse Hollow, the world's largest wind farm.
The power that that's producing right now above us on this wind turbine being consumed somewhere east of here. That's a certainty, because I can't spin this turbine unless somebody's consuming it right now.
In years past, investors have been skittish about pouring money into wind farms. The Texas Public Utility Commission didn't want to build more transmission lines without wind farms to hook up. But that chicken and egg riddle is over. The PUC just recently approved a $5 billion plan for a network of transmission lines to some of the windiest stretches of Texas. State Representative Mike Villarreal pushed hard for the plan. He says it's a start towards changing Texas's reputation as the sole domain of big oil.
Those of us who care about alternative energy, it's an important step forward. We should celebrate this victory and not give up.
But the new transmission lines won't break the wind power bottleneck anytime soon. Construction won't be completed for 5 years. Still, wind producers aren't wasting any time. Plans are underway for more than a dozen new wind farms in West Texas. In Abilene, I'm David Martin Davies for Marketplace.
Congress has finally approved a bill to help people facing foreclosure. The Senate passed it over the weekend. The bill also allows for a government bailout of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac if need be. But it won't do anything about mortgage rates. And that's a big reason why nobody's buying and people can't sell.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine is here as usual on Mondays. Alan, the Fed cut interest rates for so long, and usually you see a spillover in the mortgage market. That just isn't happening. What's going on?
Well, up until, say, a year ago when the junk mortgage market started melting down, zillions and zillions of dollars, many of them from overseas, were funding mortgages, you know, indirectly by buying securities that were assembled based on mortgages that lenders made. And a lot of that foreign money is gone. The U.S. money, the lenders have become, you know, much pickier. But it's an example of why when we talk about the Fed lowered interest rates, what we really should say every time is the Fed lowered short-term interest rates, because long-term interest rates might or might not head in the same direction as short rates.
Alan, give us a scenario here where you see things starting to loosen up and turn around.
Well, if the Fannie and Freddie thing stops going into, forgive me, atrial fibrillation, you know, every once in a while, sooner or later, housing prices will hit a bottom. Sooner or later, mortgage stuff will turn around. But I don't know when. And the current interest rate is about 6.4%. That's not really that expensive. It's just that it's not lower than it was when the Fed started. I don't know that 6.4 is an expensive rate.
Right.
It's just there are problems in the market.
So if inflation continues to pose a threat and the Fed does, in fact, raise interest rates at some point, what is that going to do to this situation?
Well, if you believe conventional theory, which I'm not sure I do, the conventional theory is mortgages are based on long-term rates and that long-term rates are based on fears of inflation. In theory, if the Fed raises short rates, it might actually lower mortgage rates. I don't know that that would happen, but it definitely could.
All right, Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine. Thanks.
Scott, I was happy to be here.
And you're welcome to weigh in on this subject as well. Our website is marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.